Before his illness, Bruno Pignatelli had also been a keen big-game angler who visited Mauritius regularly, so Elsa was also well-known and respected on the island. Nobody was going to pry into her affairs or make awkward inquiries about her reasons for being at Maison des Elysees, with a team of her engineers and consultants. Shaza and Elsa were still keeping up appearances and exercising elaborate decorum, even to the extent of occupying separate but interconnecting suites on the top floor of Maison des Elysees. The family thought this little charade was hilarious. They were all waiting for the two of them in the gazebo on the lawn above the fish pools, when they came down for evening cocktails. Elsa had bathed Shaza and anointed his bruises and scrapes, so he looked very dapper and refreshed, and limped only slightly as they strolled down the front steps together. He was dressed in a cream tropical silk suit with a crisp new eye patch, and she wore a full-length gauzy chiffon with a frangipani spray in her hair.
"Look at the little devils. Do you really believe that they're just jolly good pals?" Gary demanded with a twinkle in his eye, and Isabella and Holly had to cling to each other for support.
Even Santan covered her smile with the Japanese fan and turned away to speak to one of the engineers. Isabella had every reason to be at Maison des Elysees, even though the Senate was in session. She was on the board of directors of Capricorn Chemicals. Since the trip to Chisora Concession, when she had first learnt of the Syndex project, Isabella had shown a sudden interest in CCI. She had succeeded in having herself appointed to the Senate Standing Committee on Agriculture, and after that it had required only a few subtle hints for Gary to offer her a seat on the CCI board. She had rapidly become an active and valuable addition to the management team of Capricorn, and had never missed a meeting of the board. She had taken a particular interest in the Syndex project, and Gary had naturally included her in this gathering. Gary had also seized the opportunity of bringing Holly and the children along for an unscheduled holiday. Although he would be heavily occupied with the technical discussions, he hoped to be able to spend some time each day with his family. Holly had been complaining recently that they saw so little of him, and the children were growing up so quickly that he was missing a big slice of their childhood. These days, Santan Courtney Malcolm-S never missed a chance to be with her great-grandchildren, and she had insisted on boarding the Lear when it took off from Lanseria Private Airport outside Johannesburg. Indeed, so large had been the family contingent and the weight of their luggage that the other Capricorn directors had been obliged to catch the next commercial flight. Maison des Elysees was bursting at the seams. Every bed was occupied, and they had set up two extra cots in the nursery for the babies. Santan had borrowed extra trained staff from La Pirogue, the five-star beach resort just down the coast at Flick and Flack, to deal with the invasion. Then she had sent the Lear back to Johannesburg to bring in supplies of such essentials as imperial caviar and vintage Krug, and fresh fruit and baby foods that were unobtainable on the island. The Krug was flowing freely now as Shaza and Elsa joined the party under the frivolous fretwork roof of the gazebo. There was an exuberant orgy of kisses and handshakes and backslapping and happy cries of greeting. Elsa had been presented to Santan only briefly the previous evening, when the old lady arrived at Maison des Elysees. Even though Santan had been tired by the long jet flight, they had warmed to each other immediately. Santan had squinted at her in that particular way she had when she was concentrating deeply. Then her eyes had straightened and she had smiled and held out her hand. "Shaza has told me many good things about you, but I suspect that's not half of it," she said in Italian, and Elsa had smiled with pleasure at the compliment and at Santan's command of her language.
"I did not know that you spoke Italian, Signora Courtney Malcolm-S."
"There is certainly much we have to learn about each other," Santan nodded.
"I look forward to that," Elsa replied.
They had recognized kindred spirits, and now, under the gazebo, Elsa moved naturally to Santan's side and kissed her cheek.
"Well," Santan thought complacently as she took Elsa's arm, "Shaza took a long time to find this one, but she was well worth waiting for."
Gary's children were chasing each other around the gazebo, and their shrieks and howls detracted a little from the sophisticated ambiance of the gathering.
"I must admit," Shaza remarked as he regarded his grandchildren balefully, "that I'm becoming more like Henry VIII every day. I prefer small children in the abstract."
"As I recall, at that age you were every bit as bad,"
Santan rallied immediately to the defence of her brood of great-grandchildren. But at that moment a particularly piercing squeal made Shaza wince. "For that one alone you've boiled me in oil. Mater, you're in danger of becoming a doting great-granny."
"They'll soon have enough of it." Santan smiled down on them fondly. "Not before I do, I assure you," he muttered, and went off to where Bella was chatting to the Pignatelli engineers.
Isabella had set out to be charming to the German director, and by this time he was throwing off sparks. For Isabella there was a bizarre sense of unreality about the scene. She felt like an actress in a Franco Zeffirelli movie. The gleaming ivory house, the weird shapes of the trees and tropical plants, the gigantic fronds of the Royal Victoria water lilies floating on the ponds, and the shoals of multicoloured ornamental carp sailing beneath them all contributed to a fantastic dreamlike setting. The laughter and the disjointed, enigmatic conversations in different languages, and the cries of the children were all so inconsequential when set against the true reason for this gathering. There was Nana holding court like a dowager empress, and Holly and Elsa Pignatelli wearing precious chiffons and silks that cost a working man's wages for a year. While somewhere far away her little Nicholas was dressed in combat camouflage and played with the ghastly weapons of war, with soldiers and terrorists for companions. Here she flirted with this balding middle-aged man who looked like a grocer or a barman, but who was in reality the purveyor of death in one of its least attractive guises. Here she smiled at her big teddy bear of a brother and linked arms with her beloved father while she conspired to betray them both, and her country to boot. Here was the shell, the beautiful, groomed, intelligent, successful young woman, fully in control of her destiny and the world around her, while within was the terrified, confused creature, suffering and bereaved, the pawn of powerful, shadowy forces in a game that she did not understand. "One day at a time," she warned herself. "One step at a time." And the next step was the Syndex 25 project. Perhaps this would be the ultimate endeavour that Ramon had promised her. Once she had given them the Syndex project, perhaps they would be able to escape from the web. She, Ramon, and Nicholas. Perhaps then the nightmare would end. The conference began the following morning in the dining room of the Maison des Elysees. They sat beneath the revolving punker fans at the long walnut table which extended to seat 30 persons, and they talked about death. They discussed the mechanics and the chemical structure of death. They argued the packaging and the quality control and the cost efficiency of death, as though talking about manufacturing potato crisps or face cream. Isabella steeled herself to show no reaction to the things she heard discussed at the long table. She had learnt never to underestimate the powers of observation of her brother Gary. Behind the horn-rimmed spectacles and the bluff, genial facade, he missed very little. She knew that he would pick up any sign of horror or revulsion that she showed. That would probably be the end of her involvement in the project. The Pignatelli technicians had prepared a dossier. The copies were contained in untitled but handsome pigskin folders, which were placed on the dining room table in front of each of them. The dossier was exhaustive, and covered every aspect of the problem of manufacturing, storing, and deploying the nerve gas. Werner Stoltz, the technical director, took them through the dossier a paragraph at a time. As horror unfolded on horror, read out in Werner's clipped, sibilant German accent, Isabella found that she had to exercise all her self-control to keep her expression neutral and businesslike. Syndex 25 is a volatile gas consisting of an organophosphorus compound of the alkyl phosphonic fluoridic acid group. Gases of this composition are known as G-agents and include sarin and soman. However, Syndex 25 has desirable features that differ distinctly from these older types of nerve gas. As he enumerated these features, Isabella was appalled by his choice of the adjective desirable, but she nodded thoughtfully and kept her eyes on the dossier. Syndex 25 has a unique and highly aggressive combination of properties. These are high toxicity, rapid action, percutaneous effectiveness, as well as absorption through the lungs and mucous membrane of the human body. Other advantages are high cost-effective ratios. By reason of its dual chemical structure, it is safe to manufacture, store, and handle. Once the two agents, which make up Syndex-25, are mixed, the gas becomes highly unstable and has an extremely short effective lifespan. Thus, it is more readily controlled in the field. After the elimination of the threatened population, the treated terrain can be more swiftly taken under friendly control. He beamed down the table at them benignly. I would like now to discuss each of these properties in greater detail. Let us take the question of toxicity. Syndex in either vapor or aerosol form absorbed through the lungs as an LD to the power of 50 dosage. He smiled apologetically. Which means that it will kill 50% of the threatened population of moderately active adult men in 2 minutes, and 100% of the population in 10 minutes. This is not significantly more rapid than sarin, but it is in its percutaneous effect that Syndex comes into its own. It is absorbed much more rapidly through the skin, the eyes, the nose, the throat, and the digestive system than sarin. 1 microliter of Syndex, and I remind you that that is 1/1,000,000th part of a liter, applied to naked skin will incapacitate a man in 2 minutes and kill in 15. This is approximately 4 times more potent than sarin. Although atrophine injected intravenously within 30 seconds may inhibit the process and reduce some of the symptoms, it will not arrest spontaneous collapse of the respiratory system and subsequent death by suffocation. I will come later to the specific symptoms of exposure to the agent. But let us now discuss the cost of manufacture. Please turn to page 12 of the dossier. They obeyed like schoolchildren, and Werner Stoltz went on. You will see from the bottom line of our estimates that at this point in time, the plant will cost in the region of $20 million United States dollars, and the direct cost of manufacture will amount to $20 per kilo. Isabella wondered, even in the stress of listening to these horrific details, why the use of newspeak clichés such as bottom line and this point in time annoyed her so. I wish he would speak plain English, she thought, as if that would somehow make the facts more palatable. Werner was still speaking. Translated into comparative terms, that means that the entire plant would cost the same as a single Harrier jet fighter from British Aerospace, and the cost of manufacture of a stock of Syndex sufficient to ensure the defense of the country for 12 months would be equivalent to the purchase of 50 Sidewinder air-to-air missiles. That's an offer we just can't refuse, Gary chuckled, and Isabella felt a stab of hatred for him that shocked her with its intensity. How can he joke about something like this? She dared not look up at him. He might have read her thoughts. Werner nodded and smiled agreement with Gary. Of course, Syndex needs no special vehicle for dissemination. Ordinary crop sprayer aircraft, such as those in day-to-day use in agricultural situations, can be readily adapted for the purpose. The gas may also be delivered by artillery projectile. The new G5 long-range howitzer, being developed at present by Arms Corps, would be ideal. At noon they broke for a swim in the pool and a buffet lunch on the terrace. The discussion dwelt largely on Elsa and Schaza's recent visit to the Salzburg Festival, where Herbert von Karajan had directed the Berlin Philharmonic Orchestra. They went back into the dining room to listen to a description of the symptoms of Syndex 25 poisoning. Although it has never been tested on human subjects, we have determined that the symptoms of a moderate exposure to Syndex aerosol will not differ greatly from other G-agent nerve gases, Werner told them. These would commence with a sensation of tightness in the chest and difficulty in breathing, followed by copious running of the nose and a burning, stinging pain in the eyes and dimming of vision. Isabella felt her own eyes begin to sting in sympathy, and she dabbed at them surreptitiously. As these symptoms become progressively more intense, there will be heavy salivation and frothing at the mouth, sweating and trembling, nausea and belching, sensations of heartburn and stomach cramps, which will lead swiftly to projectile vomiting and explosive diarrhea. These will be followed by involuntary urination and bleeding from the mucous membrane of the eyes, nose, mouth, and genitalia. Trembling, twitching, and giddiness and muscle cramps will lead to paralysis and convulsions.